Greetings and welcome to The Dividing Line. I think I didn't hear any music, so what's going on? Well, okay, then I don't know, but give somebody a countdown. That means you want them to go. Not going to play music. All right, welcome to The Dividing Line. Second time I've started that, but that's okay. You didn't hear that, I hope. I don't know. It doesn't matter. We are in the AO Mobile Command, and we are currently coming to you live from beautiful Golden, Colorado. It's a little warm up here. I guess there's a big, huge, high-pressure system that's just parked itself over the west. And I may cough a couple times during the program today. So before the Karen cult members in the audience start sending SWAT teams, which is would have been once an over-the-top silly statement, but it's not anymore, and we all know it. I actually thought about trying to – I didn't have the time to do so because I was looking at Gregory of Nyssa and getting some other stuff, much more important stuff put together for you here. But I took a picture this morning, and this will give you an idea. So you should be seeing a picture from, I don't know, I guess this is around 12,500, 13,000 feet above sea level, something like that. Now, I have other pictures like this from years past, and you'd be able to see far into the distance, and you'd be able to make out trees on the mountainsides and all the rest of the stuff. Instead, see, there's the coughing. I guess there are fires up in Idaho or something. And the rotation of the high, which is making it very hot in Phoenix right now, is sucking all that smoke down into Colorado. And I noticed that when I pulled into Colorado Springs a few days ago, you couldn't even see Pikes Peak. And that's sort of obvious in that area. But no, you couldn't. And that's what it looked like just a few hours ago up on, I think I was descending Mount Evans at this point. I'm not 100% certain, but I may have just stopped. The road up there, God bless them, they call it the highest paved road in North America. The term paved needs to be defined a little bit more closely, I think, in certain sections, in most sections. It's one thing going up, you're going slow. Man, coming down, I lost about 14 fillings along the way. It's craziness, but at least there weren't any storms today. But it looked like that. And so I spent, I don't know, 3.5 hours breathing that stuff in very hard. And I was not breathing through my nose. So my lungs are like, could we get rid of all this now? And yeah, has nothing to do with COVID. Has nothing to do with leftist liberal policies. It has to do with, you know, life. And the fact that my lungs would like to kick all that stuff back out after I sucked it all in there. But, it was beautiful up there. And I don't know if I'll ever get a chance to do it again. So I just decided I need to get back up to Evans. The parking lot there is at 14,130 feet above sea level. Ken Gontar has told me that above 10,000 feet, pilots have to have oxygen. So I can guarantee you when you start that climb, you're already above 10,000 feet. And I didn't see anybody there offering oxygen to bicyclists at all. I looked, but there wasn't anybody there. So I guess we're not as important as pilots. I'm going to try to put some of the pictures up on Facebook later on. Cause there's sort of a beauty even when you can't see everything all that clearly. There was still I got some really neat shots and things like that. But I'm just thankful to have had the opportunity to get back up there again. It's been a couple of years. Didn't go up there all that fast, mainly because I have something coming up on Saturday that I will have to do really fast. And so let's just say that it's very clear now that I am on the other side of the hill. That was a phrase, getting over the hill, you know? Well, the sad thing, if you're a cyclist, is you have all this data. I've been using Garmin for years and years and years. You put that into either the Garmin app or the Strava app. It's got thousands and thousands of rides that it can analyze. And so nice big graphs come out that say, you're getting old. You can just see the, 2016 was the top. And we're doing the downward spiral thing. And yeah, it's like, okay, but I didn't see too many other people my age on bikes anywhere near the top of it. And nobody had a bike past me. And I was stopping and taking lots of pictures. I passed about four guys and they were all younger than me. In fact, two of them were probably in their 20s. And I do love the disgusted look you get from, you know, 24-year-old guys when you blow by them and you've got this. And it's just, so that's half the reason I have it. It's fun. Anyway, so we had a great time, a wonderful time at Hope Chapel in Colorado Springs. I really want to thank everybody there put it together. Jason Lyle and I got to spend more time together than we've really gotten to spend in the past. Other than the one time he actually drove up here, and he even offered to come up tonight to do some stargazing. And I'm just like, Jason, I'm sorry, but after climbing to the top of Mount Evans today, by 9 o'clock tonight, when it's dark enough to be doing anything, you may be showing me something wonderful, but you're going to hear snoring coming back. So I just, and I'm speaking twice this weekend, Redemption Hills Church on Sunday morning from John 17, and then Boulder Bible Church in the evening down in Boulder. So, I've got a lot of stuff going on, and so we couldn't do it. But I got to spend time with Jason, and we determined that even though there's like 12 years between us, we were separated at birth. He got all the brains, clearly. And all the looks too. I'm not sure what happened to me. It's sort of like that Twins movie. I'm Danny DeVito. Still, man, we are freakishly alike in stuff that we like and don't like and things like that. He's even a plainer eater than I am, which is really hard to be honest with you. Ask Rich. He knows. Anyway, we had a great time together. And so when we spoke together, I spoke on, and I haven't looked, I would assume that these are on the church's website or something. But I spoke on, dealing with Roman Catholicism initially in the first session, which these days is fascinating with everything going on with German bishops rebelling and Pope Francis making a mockery of the old line, is the Pope Catholic? We can't tell. Sort of hard to know these days, to be perfectly honest with you. Jason did a great presentation on dealing with secularists, and it was very presuppositional in nature and really good. And then, fairly late in the evening for me, I spoke on dealing with the LGBTQ movement. And that was tough. I started preaching, and it was interesting because when I got done, everybody was perfectly quiet. And even when people started coming up to us, they were whispering. And I said to Jason, I said, why is everybody whispering? And he said, you sucked the air out of the room. I was like, oh, okay. It was pretty serious. I spoke right to the parents, especially in the room. About the world's fevered desire to get hold of their children and to destroy them. And so we had some really good conversations afterwards, deep conversations afterwards. It was great. So And it was a Tuesday night. And so that really illustrates, what we need to be doing with the road trips is, you know, I can't do everything. I can't do something every night. You know, literally I have to, I'm traveling alone. I suppose I shouldn't say that, but, it's pretty obvious. I don't have anybody operating my stuff here. I do it all myself. I do all the setting up and breaking down of the RV. So at the same time, I'm listening to stuff and studying stuff and getting ready to speak up in Idaho. I don't know how many times in Moscow at NSA and Christchurch and the Grace Agenda Conference. I'm listening to stuff and studying stuff. And at the same time, I'm hooking up the sewer connection for the RV. And you need to do that correctly. There's a right way and there's lots of wrong ways. Yeah. Yeah. There really is. And you got to get the electrical stuff right. And you got to get the, you know, the reality is that garden hoses, sometimes they hook up right and sometimes they don't. That's just the way it is. I've got a little leak on the connection here, but, yeah, all sorts of stuff like that. How to chalk wheels, and all the other fun stuff that comes with the RV life while doing everything else. And, so this was a really good example, I think, of, you know, it's Tuesday. And, like I was saying, I can't do something every night when I'm traveling. So if you see that I happen to have been in the general area and I don't necessarily on this trip get to you, please be patient. Because like some nights I need to do laundry. I mean, it's just that basic. And if I don't want to use, if I'm not staying in a place that has particularly nice laundry facilities, I've got this laundry bag and it's in the shower and it's sort of like how humanity did it for many, many years, except I have soap and humanity didn't have that. But, so it's still a modern way of doing it, I guess. But, so there are some practical things sometimes need to be done and, you know, like cleaning up and stuff like that. So it's an interesting life, but it was so neat. I'm not going to go into details, but it was so neat to be able to talk with people and look into people's eyes and all that neat stuff, which is what you can't do like this. I mean, I can look at Rich, even though he's got his camera off and he's probably snoozing about now. But that's not the same thing. And I don't care even if you're talking with somebody that way. It's just not the same thing. You saw what happened when Jason and I were together. That would not have happened over Zoom. No way. There was a natural chemistry that takes place there that just simply doesn't happen in other contexts. So, looking forward to seeing folks, this weekend. Some of the folks came down to Colorado Springs, said they'll be visiting, when we're up here in Denver. Thanks to all the prayers for the few of you who, prayed because I had to drive I-25 between Colorado Springs and Denver. It seems that CDOT, Colorado Department of Transportation, has decided that that section needs to be under constant construction. It has been for years. I spoke at that church in 2019, and I drove through the same mess 2 years ago that I then had to drive through. And Rich warned me. He told me. He said, in that construction, you've got narrow, narrow lanes. You have those cement, concrete divider thingies right up against the lane. And people think it's the Indianapolis Speedway. They're flying through there. And it's one thing when it's a car, but a couple times I'm in the right lane and I'm as far to the right as I can get, but you know, there's only so far to the right you can go. And semis, full size semis are blowing by me. They're not even speed limit. What's that? It's a speed suggestion. Nothing more than that. So yeah, it was fun. We made it. No damage. Yes, we are fully insured. But yeah, we made it. So, I aged significantly. I think there's more white in my beard as a result of that. But, anyway, so anyhow, hope you're looking forward to more of these in the future. I will be at, just go to the, now Rich, am I, did I see correctly that the calendar has been in some way connected to the app? That there's a connection there now. So if you have the A&L app, that is correct. Good. All right. So, I thought I saw that, but stuff that comes through while I'm driving is not necessarily guaranteed to stay in the brain for obvious and good reasons. Some more of that good smoke we're going to get rid of there. From the air, not from any other sources. So keep an eye on the app, and we're going to be up in Frenchtown, and of course up in Idaho, and then we're going to be in Las Vegas, and that's just this trip, and then I really need to get working on the G3 trip, and we'll see what comes of that. All right, now, real quick, I'm not going to spend much time on this because I want to get into Gregory of Nyssa and Gregory Thaumaturgus. Yeah. You sent that before, and yeah, I'm at an RV park in Golden, Colorado, and Rich is sending me pictures of these old ancient things, and he thinks I'm going to share it, and I'm not. But I'm going to tell you something. I'm looking through my windows on this side at a bus size RV. There's one over here that I think is bigger. And I think they have like a thing they've welded on the back for a Harley. And then that has an attachment for a car. I don't even know how long that is. And then across the street. And I mean, these people put flagpoles up, lighted flagpoles at night. They're not pulling out every few days like I am. But these things are humongous. And the guy next door to me was telling me that his basically drives itself, which I'm not sure if that made me feel good or bad, to be honest with you. It's a little bit scary. I've decided that our rig is smack dab in the middle. I've seen some out there that would absolutely forever cause you to be the Hunchback of Notre Dame. I mean, they're just that small. And I mean, if you lean to the right, you hit your head on the front. And once you go in, I mean, it's just, I don't know how that works, to be honest with you. And then you've got these things that you could put 50 people in there and they'd be comfortable. And so somewhere in the middle is where I am, I would guess. And so I wish I had more time at night. I'm not really a night person, but just wandering around one of these places. I've heard of RV park evangelists. I have. And I could see how that could be. I've actually had the idea. And I'll have to see if it, and I've actually sort of started working on it. I was setting my little telescope up. I've got a 4.5-inch telescope with me, setting it up at night. The problem is, by the time night comes along, I'm dead tired. And I'll be honest with you, thanks to either the air conditions, the smoke, or the storms, I haven't seen a clear night yet the whole time I've been traveling. But it would be cool if you put something out like that. You'd attract people because people walk their dogs and they're very friendly. Very, very friendly. The guy over on this side, I said, yeah, I'm going to be here about 5 days, something like that. And he says, oh, okay. All right. I told him I was going to go for the ride today. He says, hey, I'll keep an eye on your rig for you. I was like, cool. It's a little cult. It really is. Can I borrow your sewer tube? it's different. Anyway. So, all right. Put all that stuff aside real briefly. The speed at which my nation has been transformed into something completely different has left me basically speechless. I don't think most people understand. I just think we're too busy with other things in our lives, or we just have this long term, we just trust the government idea thing going on. I don't know. But you need to understand, because the Equality Act thing is coming one way or the other. And that's going to be huge. And that's massive. But if you want to see how it's going to be fleshed out over time, look at what just happened with the eviction issue and renters. If you just step back for a second, private property just disappeared. The entire idea of ownership of property that is fundamental to the foundations of the Constitution of the United States has been undone by the unilateral decree of a woman who until January was a college professor. She is unelected. But somehow now has the authority to say to property owners, you don't get to do with your property what you want to do with your property, in the sense of, if, because obviously what's going on is a lot of people are dependent upon rental income to pay their own mortgages. And so you are having people losing their property because the government says you can, if someone's living in your property and they had an agreement with you because of COVID, they can now live there for free and you can't get rid of them and you cannot recover that investment. And if the bank ends up with your property, who did banks support and who did banks give money to in the election? Huh. Wow. That's interesting how that works. Yeah. I mean, and Biden, who again, I don't think is with us any longer. He is the perfect Manchurian candidate, but, and maybe they didn't even want him to say this. Maybe they'll eventually just start excluding him from the conversation so he won't say things like this. But he basically admitted, yeah, we can't find any legal experts that say this is actually constitutional, but we're going to try. Aren't these the people that allegedly swore an oath to uphold the Constitution, not destroy the Constitution? But then again, an oath requires a worldview that has a judge in it. And so oaths... Once you have secularism, why do you have oaths? What are you swearing by? Why should ugly bags of mostly water swearing something if they're the highest thing there is? What does it matter? Who cares? It's literally like trusting, Slick Bob at Slick Bob's Used Cars, where you can see the pile of sawdust under the transmission of the vehicle. And he gives you his oath that it's in great shape. Yeah. Okay. Great. Wonderful. That's where we are now? Wow. And so if these folks, if this regime is so blatantly willing to be utterly lawless, a law unto itself, I wonder how many Americans even understand. Or people anywhere in the West or around the world, look at what's happening in South Africa, really understand that line that they've heard many times before. And that is that we are a nation of laws, not of men. What's that supposed to mean? Well, given what we've discovered about the educational system and about the teachers' unions, I'm sure they've been lied about anyways. No culture can possibly last when the laws that define it on Monday are different on Friday. You can't. That kind of inconsistency will destroy any people. The beauty of God's law is your grandparents lived by it and your grandchildren will be blessed by it. But man's laws, oh goodness. We've already seen example after example after example just over the past 18 months of man decreeing things that now no meaning at all. Doesn't matter at all. A nation of men rather than law. It's anarchy. It's destruction. It's destructive of human life. And that's what we're looking at. That's what we are facing. There's no two ways about it. It's astonishing. The speed at which this has happened and the boldness. Oh, the boldness. And I really have to wonder. Look, I don't believe, I'll be honest with you, I don't believe 80 some odd million people voted for the man who doesn't know which day of the week it is. There was zero excitement for that man. So when you look me in the eye and say, you know what, more Americans voted for Joe Biden than voted for Barack Obama, I just go, you are a silly person. You, there's probably a better line from Monty Python someplace, but you are naive on a level that's really difficult to begin to comprehend. So this regime with the figure, old man figurehead that they trot out there to blather around a little bit, but the people behind the scenes that are running it, these people are bold. They hate the Constitution. They hate Western democracy. Well, they use all the same terms, of course. That's what you have to do. But, oh, are they passionate about wanting something completely different? And they are accomplishing it at high speed. At high speed. But one hope that I have, because see, in my mind, from one direction, it's like, God's got to tear this one down. It needs to become a watchword. Remember what we had and lost it because we became focused upon our things and our comforts. It would be an incredible example. But another possibility is these people who think themselves, they profess themselves to be wise. Oh, are they wise? My, my, my. These people have it all figured out. They're actually people who have very little knowledge outside of their own very narrow fields of expertise. They are not Renaissance people by any, they're not widely read at all. And they show no even basic rudimentary wisdom. They're good at plotting and scheming, but that's not what wisdom is. But these people may well finally go so far, and man, they've gone a long ways already. You would think this would have already happened. But Doug Wilson, yes, I listened to Blog and Mayblog, made the arguments a couple days ago that eventually, at some point, you're sitting in the room and you've been putting up and putting up and you look across the room and your eyes lock with another person and there's an instant of recognition. You too? And then you look around and there's a bunch of people in the room that are looking at you going, this is not right. No way. Is that going to happen? Could. Would that be a blessing from God? Oh man, would it ever. We'll see. But right now, the boldness of these people to just simply say, we know what that Constitution says. We don't care. We don't. It's from our perspective, it is doomed. It will be gone before long anyway. So why should we care? We will continue talking about it and we will continue feigning allegiance to it, but we hate it. And we will get rid of it. All right. Sorry, I went a little bit longer than that. I should have. So a couple weeks ago, when we had our debate right before I left last program before started doing everything here in the mobile studios, which, as you know, is just the den at the back of the fifth wheel. So, my understanding is if the fifth wheel is going to get damaged, this is where it normally ends up happening. Somebody taking a turn too tight, not seeing something. I can see how that can happen. Oh, my guardian angel is working overtime. There's no choice about it. Anyway, we looked at Calvin, and for me anyways, and other people said it was too, enjoyably spent some time in some deep contemplation of the doctrine of the Trinity and Calvin's place in that. And we really did not scratch the surface, to be honest with you. There's a lot of scholarly literature on that subject. And there are a lot of people who think that Calvin was in error in criticizing some formulations of post-Nicene Orthodoxy while clearly showing an understanding and sort of arguing that a closer reading of, like, the great Cappadocians, Basil, Gregory, and Gregory, maybe reading them closer in their own context rather than as interpreted down through the centuries might be a wiser way of doing things. Maybe we'll have time in some context to look at that. And I would say to you, that's important stuff. It really is. It's easy for us to dismiss that kind of thing, but the language that we have inherited to speak about our own theology comes from history. And the more we recognize those sources, the better equipped we're going to be to properly handle the, what some people call the great tradition that has been passed down to us. And one thing's very, very clear. If you do not study church history, you will not be in a position at all to critically analyze the traditions that your own church embodies. And your every church embodies it. And as I've said a million times before, if your church pretends it doesn't embody a certain form of tradition, that means it is not even beginning to try to analyze the traditions that it actually does have. That's one of the biggest problems of fundamentalism, in general. Not every fundamentalist, but in general. So, anyway, a quote was given, and I mentioned at the time that I wanted to get to it. And it's from Gregory of Nyssa. So, we need to differentiate all our Gregories. There's lots of, for some reason, there are a lot of Gregories in church history. Gregory of Nyssa, Gregory Thaumaturgus, or Neo Caesarea, something whatever. And then you've got popes, and then they have Roman numerals after their Gregories, including Gregory the Great. So you got to know who you're talking about, or you get really confused. So there was a epistle that has come down to us through history. It's called On Not Three Gods. On Not Three Gods. Written to Ablabius. A-B-L-A-B-I-U-S. Ablabius. Must have been a rough pregnancy, but anyway. And Ablabius has written to Gregory and has asked him the question whether it is appropriate or inappropriate in light of the doctrine of the Trinity to speak of three gods. Now, Gregory's response is not super long. I mean, you can read it in one sitting fairly easily, unless Twitter and Facebook has destroyed your ability to think for more than 15 seconds at a time, which for many of us is exactly what has happened. It's not super long, but it isn't easy to follow. And part of me would like to say there would have been a much more concise way to basically say, since the biblical revelation of monotheism, I can't lean on this because it moves the camera. The biblical revelation of monotheism in Revelation itself is foundational to everything else. It was first, it's primary, it's foundational, it's definitional. I would argue that when you speak of the distinctions of Father, Son, and Spirit, that those distinctions are introduced to us scripturally. Really dependent upon a pre-existing understanding of the foundational nature of Shema Yisrael, Yahweh Eloheinu, Yahweh Echad. Hear, Israel, Yahweh is our God, Yahweh is one. If you were to say this is the key assertion that then conditions everything after it, that would be it. And those of you who've seen me teach on the Trinity know that when I do the triangle thing where you have monotheism, the existence of three persons, the equality of persons, and then the points of the triangle point to errors that come from denying any one of these three. It's very useful. It's in the Forgotten Trinity. What's at the bottom? What's holding the triangle up? Monotheism. So it would seem to me that if someone said, well, in light of the deity of Christ, in light of the deity of the Holy Spirit, can't we speak of three gods? My response would be that's thinking about it backwards from the way in which it has been revealed to us. And I would also then default back to, as Calvin did, the identification of Father, Son, and Spirit as Yahweh. The use of that one name, which Jehovah's Witnesses write, you've heard 6,000 times in the Old Testament. It's all over the place. It's true. But when you actually think about the fact that New Testament writers then utilize that name specifically of the Son in unique contexts, especially the Psalm 102, 25, 27, Hebrews chapter 1, 10 through 12 citation, you just can't get around it. It's just, I think I've seen most of the attempts and they fail and fail badly, including Buzzard's really bad attempt at it. I mean, it works for a lot of folks who don't know some of the background issues, but anyway. So I would have responded to Eblabius without having blabbed quite as much as Gregory did. But still, when you read it, it's intriguing. It's interesting. I personally struggled with the illustrations he used because of the fact that he used illustrations from creation to attempt to communicate something that I think is absolutely unique, and hence, like the Trinity itself, there's no analogy that actually really works. And so I struggle a little bit with that. But I wanted to get to the specific quotation, which is from the last paragraph of On Not Three Gods. And what I did before I left home is I spent a fair amount of time tracking down the original language source for the English translation. You can find the English translation of this in what we used to call the Erdman set. Now Hendrickson has it. So it's really the Schaff set. Schaff did most of the editing, but it wasn't just him. It's the 38 volumes that look so wonderful on a bookshelf. They really look, they don't have any look at all when they're in a program. But I have them in accordance. And of course I had them in print long before I had them in accordance. And so this is the Greek underlying the translation. And you will find lots of different translations. And one of the reasons for that, I can illustrate from my own book on the Quran. When I addressed the Quran's utilization of the infancy gospel of Thomas as if it were part of the Injil, as if it were part of the Christian scriptures, which it obviously never was, I translated it. The Greek, and of course people might argue as to whether that was the original Coptic, Syriac, all that kind of argumentation,
yeah.
But I had it in Greek, and so I translated it. And there was a real practical reason for that. You can't copyright the original languages. And so as long as you're doing your own translation, you don't even have to jump through the hoops that you normally have to jump through to quote somebody else's work. And so I just translated it myself. And as a result, you frequently end up with differing translations in a, you know, being cited by different individuals. And if it wasn't as much of a big deal in the olden days because everybody could read Latin and almost everybody could read Greek, at least in scholarship. And now that's just not the case. So here is the last paragraph as I see time going by here. Here is the last paragraph of On Not Three Gods as it's found in the most common English source, because that same set is available, like at ccel.org. So it's available online. Not all that easy to search, but you can learn how to do it. So that's probably the most common translation you're going to be encountering. And by the way, I wanted to mention this. I was reading On Not Three Gods quickly before the program started, and I noticed something, and that this kind of thing I like to notice, and there are a few of you geeky people out there that like to notice these things too. So I'll share them, and all the geeky people go, ooh. Like Chris Honholz. I noticed Gregory in a specific section where he was speaking about the divine persons and their relationship, he referred to the Son as the only begotten God. And this is in the English translation. Now, what's interesting is, if you are familiar with the Gospel of John, you know, and certainly for me, by the way, the Gospel of Mark is now out. We haven't ordered it yet because I'm looking for a better way to order it. But man, as soon as I get back, even if we have to do it that way, we're ordering Gospel of Mark. The ECM version is out. I'm not sure if the modules are ready for download yet or not. But anyway, we'll get to it when we get back. But John's being worked down in Birmingham. And for me, one of the most fascinating questions that the application of CBGM technology to the Gospel of John is going to address will be the textual variant of John 1:18, where you have homonagades quios, the only begotten Son, which is what's in the King James TR. Then you have monogenes theos or homonagenes theos. Both those would basically be rendered as the unique God or the only begotten God. The article might have an impact one way or the other. But I'm really interested in seeing what the CBGM data does with that as far as coherence goes. That could be really, really interesting. But the point being that Gregory of Nyssa over and over and over again, I was looking at the Greek, over and over and over again uses Monogenes Theos of the sun. So it's very clear that even though he is a fourth century writer moving toward the fifth century, his manuscripts were, to use the old terminology, Alexandrian. They have the same reading that's in P66, P75, Sinaiticus, and Vaticanus, but not in Alexandrinus. And so I just found that very, very interesting that this was a regular phraseology that he used. And hence, what that means is he had himself decided that this is the best reading by far, and it's one that we can utilize regularly. Okay, there was a little geeky thing to throw out for textual critical guys. All right, last paragraph in the Schaff set, the English translation, reads as follows. Thus, since on the one hand, the idea of cause differentiates the persons of the Holy Trinity, declaring that one exists without a cause and another is of the cause. And since on the one hand, now I'll stop saying, I would just stylistically and looking at the Greek, it uses mende. So I don't know why the translation went this way. It makes more sense to say, and since on the other hand, the divine nature is apprehended by every conception as unchangeable and undivided, for these reasons we properly declare the Godhead to be one and God to be one, and employ in the singular all other names which express divine attributes. So, he says earlier on that the question as it was presented, and he recognizes that it could be an objection, and certainly as Muslims use it, it's an objection. That the whole idea, and this is really what the logical problem of the Trinity thing is all about, is, of course, to try to say this is logically incoherent based upon applying the same standards to the relationship of the persons as you have ontologically to the existence of the divine being. It's no matter how hard you fight, you are conflating categories. And that comes up here in his very concluding statement, having argued for the deity of Christ, having argued that you cannot, you know, there's a section in here, don't have time to read the whole thing. Like I said, it's available online. I would recommend it to you if you are really interested in these kinds of things to read through it. But he had argued that the Father does not do anything separately from the Son. The Son doesn't do anything that is not perfected by the Spirit. So within what we would call the economic Trinity, there is this consistency that flows from the unity that is theirs in the full possession of the divine nature. And yet they're not doing the same thing. And so the illustration that he uses is, if we say that we have been given life by God, the scriptures tell us that this life comes from the decree of the Father. The Son gives life to whom he wills. The Spirit's the one that makes us alive. But he says, we don't say that we've received three lives. We've received one life, and we recognize that that one life comes from God. And when I'm speaking of the life that I've received from the Son, that's not some different kind of life than what would come from the Father or from the Spirit. I recognize the life I received from the Son is in perfect harmony with the decree of the Father, and it's been brought to me by the Spirit of God. There's perfect harmony here, and this is his argument. And it's part of his argument as to why he concludes you don't use the phraseology three gods. because it's inappropriate to do so. But the point is that even in this final, well, you could identify it as a single sentence. Suppose if this was the Living translation of the Greek, it would probably be about six sentences. But still, let me read again and listen to how Gregory, and you can't force anybody to do this. Okay, you critics can ignore these distinctions and ignore the difference between relationship and ontology, and there you go. But I'm talking to Christians here for our understanding and our benefit and our edification. Since on the one hand, I'm going to go ahead and do the mende. Mende is a construction in Greek language that comes across into English as on the one hand, on the other hand. Okay. And this is it's a somewhat complex sentence because you've got some articles thrown in and an infinitive, but anyways, I'm just going to translate that way. Thus, since on the one hand, the idea of cause differentiates the persons of the Holy Trinity, declaring that one exists without a cause and another is of the cause. Now, I didn't have time to go back and, because I know it's in Twitter someplace, and putting stuff in Twitter is like putting it into the vanity. Same thing with Facebook for me. It's putting it into the vanishing box. It just, how do you ever go back and find anything? It's not, I mean, you can't even edit a post in Twitter, let alone find it again. I imagine somebody probably has a program out there, I don't know, that would go into your, you know, actually treat your timeline as a database and be able to do searches and stuff. That would really be useful. But anyway, Jake used a particular quotation that is different in its phraseology, but I couldn't find it quickly as to what it was. I suppose I could, look here and if anyone has, let's put it this way. Let's see how this works. Let's see if live webcasting can function this way. If anyone has the specific terminology quotation of this that Jake used, because it was in his timeline. I'm sorry. I just didn't have time and getting everything set up to go find it. I apologize, Jake. Jake, if you feel that it's relevant, I have the Greek and I'll be happy to, walk through whatever you think is a relevant distinction or differentiation in the English translation. But maybe somebody has it, in Twitter. Of course, there have been times when Rich has gone, oh, see, there it is. And I'm sitting there looking at Twitter going, really? It's not happening on my end. And I don't use one of those fancy dancy. I've used those fancy dancy for TweetDeck and TweetBot and Tweet this and Tweet that. And they all have problems. And I'm just using the plain old website. And it seems to be the slowest of them all for some reason. But, anyway, let's see if someone comes up with that. I had a DM and I thought that might have been it, but it was on a different issue. Someone, a troll, that has been trolling me. There are some interesting people out there. The point being that the first aspect of one hand, other hand is differentiation of the persons, not origination, not creation, but differentiation of the persons, declaring that one exists without a cause and another is of the cause. Now, I think the idea, and I think it was the same thing with the Calvin quote, the idea is to introduce an implicit subordinationism, which makes sense from an Islamic perspective. It's not what the Quran did, but that we discussed that briefly as well. I continue to think that is a fatal objection. I really do. That I don't think just laughing it off is enough. And I don't think that, I'm sorry, I just have not seen, actually I don't see almost, I almost never see Islamic exegesis of the Quran the way you see Christian exegesis of scripture. I've read major portions of tafsir literature, and I've just always been amazed at the substantive difference in the Christian desire to and ability to engage in grammatical, historical exegesis of the text. You just don't get that. And in fact, there's a resistance to it amongst Muslims. There are some people call it historicization, and if you do that, you destroy faith in the Quran. It's fascinating. Well worth expanding on some of that stuff. But anyway, point being, the idea is, well, Gregory is talking about the Father is not caused, but the Son is caused. And so I'd want to look very carefully at exactly what the what anaitios means, what presbuon means, and exactly how it's being utilized and what's being asserted there, but in light of what Gregory says in the rest of the epistle. This is a distinction of relationship. It's a logical distinction. It is never a temporal distinction. And yet, this is the great challenge of Christian theology in discussing the nature of God, is our language is fundamentally temporal. Every verb we use, even when we try to be atemporal in the utilization of like an infinitive or something, it's still in a context. You can't avoid it. And so I'd want to look at those things. But the balance in Gregory is found in the day portion. And since on the other hand, the divine nature, the theia, hetheia, the hetheia phusis, the divine nature is apprehended by every conception as unchangeable and undivided. Unchangeable and undivided. And Gregory is affirming that the Son possesses this divine nature, this ontological reality that has eternally existed as God and in possession of that divine nature. For these reasons, he then says, we properly declare the Godhead to be one and God to be one and employ in the singular all the other names which express divine attributes. But it's that on the one hand, on the other hand. And so he recognizes where the objection's coming from, but what he's saying is, in the final analysis, when you do not conflate the categories, then the result would be, we do not utilize the phraseology of three gods, because there is only one being of God, and that the relationship of Father, Son, and Spirit is not something that changes the indivisibility of the divine being. So it's not like the Father possesses it and then he just sort of shuttles it out to the Son, and then you have arguments as to then whether the Father and the Son then give that to the Spirit, or whether the Father alone gives the Spirit inspiration, and all the rest of that argumentation that takes place at that point, which once was the stuff of dinner conversations across the Christian world. And now I wonder what percentage, I mean, Eastern Orthodox folks know about it because it's sort of definitional to them. But man, most folks in the West know nothing whatsoever about that whole discussion. People went to war over things like that in the past. But again, this is called On Not Three Gods. It's in the volume that contains writings of Gregory of Nyssa. Some search engines might pull up Ablabius, A-B-L-A-B-I-U-S, if you want to try to find it and look at it yourself. Yes, today has been somewhat of the seminary level type thing, but it's important stuff to talk about. If it comes up in debates and stuff like that, it's worth going back to the original languages and original contexts. And I just love taking opportunities like this and going, because a lot of modern Christians have the idea that what those folks were arguing about back then, let's be honest, we think that they missed it and that we're smarter. There is a modern man hubris that we all suffer from. And the reality is, most of what Christians argue about with each other today is child's play in comparison to what most of the conversation between Christians involved in centuries past. Let's just be honest. That's just the way it is. Just the way it is. All right. Hey, as far as I can tell, I didn't hear anything from Rich that said we were having max headroom moments. No one has any idea what max headroom moments are, but Rich and I are old and we remember max headroom, and so it works for us. So you just have to let us do our, it's sort of like when Jason and I talk and we all of a sudden slip into Star Trek-ese. And he even did that a couple times in his presentation. Actually, once he even used Thanos as an illustration. That one probably communicated with a wider variety. But yeah, he throws out the ugly bags of mostly water stuff and all that kind of stuff just sort of naturally for him. And yeah, so there it goes. Anyways, hopefully it's all worked well for everybody today. Let's see, today is Thursday. So yeah, first 3 days of next week are moving long distances and staying over only one night in a place and then heading out the next morning. So we'll just have to play it by ear as to when we can get together. It all depends on if I'm speaking in the evening, weather conditions, road conditions, construction, all that kind of stuff. But if you got the app, you'll know. You'll be the first to know. So hopefully we'll be able to get together early on. I know that first day is a long one, so questionable. But anyway, thanks for watching the program today. Thanks for making it possible yet once again for us to do this. You do so by supporting us, supporting the Travel Fund and the Alpha and Omega Ministries Fund and all that neat fun stuff at aomin.org. Head on over there, and thank you for that support. We'll see you next time. God bless.